This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending the 19th of May 2023. Hello and welcome to the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle for the week ending the 19th of May. Your readers today, Nikki Baring.
Hello.
Norma York.
Hello.
And Andrew Parkinson.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, Keith Vincent. And the main headlines this week, storm brews over giant solar farm, village fights pipeline plan, and crime chief under fire over £7 million costs. So, Nikki, may we have the story behind the first headline, please?
Which was storm brews over giant solar farm. Major plans for a new solar farm in the countryside near Winchester have been submitted, sparking concerns from a local councillor as well as support from eco-campaigners. Developers Novus and Innova are proposing the solar farm at Pitt Down, south of Sarum Road, Sparsholt and Farley Mount. The site covers approximately 24 hectares, and it's estimated that it would save approximately 4,054 tonnes of carbon dioxide per year and power around 4,722 homes a year. It would operate for 40 years. So far, there have been more than 30 expressions of support from the climate crisis campaigners and one letter of objection. The local councillor, Caroline Horrell, whose ward includes Sparsholt, also has concerns. She said, "I'm in favour of solar farms in the correct location. I'm afraid this is not the correct location. It is an area of particular beauty with outstanding views, and I have asked the landowner's agent to consider other less obtrusive locations within their land holding." In the planning document, it said, "The site has been chosen primarily due to the availability of a connection to the national grid, and a range of other factors have been taken into account. The application has been supported by ecological surveys, which have informed a proposed landscape and ecological mitigation scheme. This has resulted in a biodiversity net gain of 31% in habitat units and 30% in hedgerow units. At a time when there is a climate emergency and as the country looks toward a green recovery following the COVID-19 pandemic and economic downturn, it is of key importance that renewable energy developments are encouraged, promoted, and delivered swiftly. The proposed development is demonstrated to accord with the relevant national and local plan policies and should therefore be approved without delay. The site comprises of part of an agricultural field associated with South Lynch Farm and is accessed off an existing access point of Farley Mount Road." Nicola Jones, Senior Planning Manager at Innova, previously said, "We attended the Sparsholt Parish Council meeting on November the 17th, where we provided a presentation and held a question and answer session. From this, we received a number of constructive comments from the parish councillors and members of the public."
And this headline is Village Fights Pipeline Plan. Villagers have told Southern Water managers to their face that they don't want a new drought relief scheme. 30 people gathered to show their opposition to the company's plans for a new pipeline from near Totford to Itchen Abyss. A planning application was submitted earlier this year by Southern Water, which says that Candover Drought Relief Scheme to the north of Alresford is needed to help maintain water supply and reduce many impact on rivers. In the event of the drought, the pipe would move water from the Candover Valley to the River Itchen. People in Northington Village Hall included residents of Brown Candover, Chilton Candover and Preston Candover. Southern Water answered questions and explained the thinking behind the scheme, which will operate when drought orders have been put in place. The scheme includes underground piping and five sections on the surface. After the meeting, Northington Parish Council, under Chairman Dennis Nye, submitted a strong objection to the proposal. The council argues that as the relief scheme is only due to operate until 2030, it risks being a large waste of money and that more should be invested in preventing leaks. But it also fears that in certain circumstances, the pipeline could be in place indefinitely. It also opposes the disruption to the village from the 33-week construction. This could then be followed by an indeterminate number of further construction periods as the temporary infrastructure is repeatedly erected and removed. There are also concerns about road closures, dangerous heavy plant movement, noise and dust during the construction, and low level and continuous noise from electric pumps during the 24-hour operation. It raises the issue of damage to the Candover stream ecosystem, saying the Candover Valley and the villages of Northington, Swarrington and Totford are beautiful areas. Such a proposed development will significantly degrade this to a detriment of all the residents and visitors. Northington Parish Council feels strongly that this proposal has been made based on Northington Parish Council feels strongly that this proposal has been made based primarily on Southern Water's need to meet its statutory obligations, irrespective of cost or inconvenience, it added.
Crime Chief under fire over £7 million costs. An investigation by the Liberal Democrats has revealed that the Police and Crime Commissioner of Hampshire spent £7 million since 2019. The Lib Dems discovered through Freedom of Information requests that PCCs across England and Wales have cost the taxpayer a total of £102.2 million in the past 4 years. This includes office costs, staff and expenses. The Hampshire PCC cost £7.4 million since 2019. Winchester Lib Dem election candidate Danny Chambers said, "It is shocking to see the local Conservative politician in charge of policing wasting so much money on office costs. We have lost valuable community police officers who fight crime and catch criminals, whilst the Conservative Commissioner pockets millions to run an office. Frankly, I think this is scandalous. People in Winchester tell me crimes are going unsolved and that they never see a police officer anymore. It is time we scrap this pointless, pencil-pushing role and put money back into proper community policing." A spokesman for the Hampshire Police and Crime Commissioner said, "The Police and Crime Commissioner spends £2.28 million per year on staffing costs, which includes a specialist analytical team which provide data to the Home Office. The current spend on the office is just 0.5% per year of the total spend on policing. Prior to PCCs being introduced, police authorities were in place to carry out the same role. Therefore, there has always been a cost of this function. Comparably, more than £400 million per year is spent directly on policing services." Shortly after Donna Jones took the office in May 2021, she undertook an efficiency drive to cut office costs, making redundancies and moving her office to a cheaper location, saving more than £600,000 per year. This was done in order to pay for more police officers and get rid of waste. It is also worth noting that Hampshire and Isle of Wight Constabulary is one of the largest forces in the country, and Hampshire and Isle of Wight OPCC, unlike many other OPCCs, manage the whole of the police estate, which is hundreds of buildings, and requires staff to maintain. The force has just recruited 600 more police officers for local communities, and the PCSO numbers have not been cut. Some PCSOs move on to become police officers, and this leaves vacancies, but the force is still recruiting.
Thank you. That concludes the headlines, and now we continue with the death announcements, followed by Christian comment, letters, Chronicle editorial comment, first person, and Belgarum. So we start with the death announcements this week. Baverstock, Pamela Elsie Baverstock, died peacefully at home, aged 89. Burrows, Richie Burrows, died peacefully at Flowerdown Care Home, aged 89. Fuller, Pamela Diana Fuller, died peacefully at Westacre Nursing Home, aged 91. James, Nestor Ann James, passed away on the 8th of May. And Whedon, Margaret Whedon, died peacefully at home, aged 84. Now, Andrew, I think we have a Christian comment, please.
And this week's Christian comment was written by Reverend Philip Crinks and is entitled Spirit of Service. The coronation service will live long in the memory. It also has the potential to change the country, or at least to call us back to one of our best traditions, a spirit of service to others. The King hopes that the period following the coronation will be one in which the country will be renewed in spirit. That may also be our hope, but it also requires recognizing that in each of us there is a spiritual struggle. Part of us wants to focus on things for us, starting with our own power and the status, wealth, and pleasure associated with it. Another part of us is open to the transforming call of God on our lives, to sacrifice our power to the service of God in our neighbours. What struck me in the coronation service was how honestly it represented this struggle. That was especially obvious in the words said, as different pieces of royal regalia were symbolically given to the king. People expected that the words would express the understanding of the church and the nation that the king had become the legitimate possessor of worldly power. And they did express that. But in fact, they expressed something more. They proclaimed the need for power to be used in a spirit of service and the Christian understanding of the only way that can happen. Power must be used not merely according to the rules of a worldly kingdom, but according to the rules of the self-sacrificing kingdom of God. An assertion of power, or a spirit of assertion where power and status are ways to get what we want for ourselves, needs to become a spirit of service to others. When the king was given a sword, the archbishop said, "May it be a sign and symbol not of worldly judgment, but of justice, not of might, but of mercy." When the king was given an orb, a symbol of kingship on earth, the archbishop said, "Receive this orb set under the cross, and remember always that the kingdoms of this world are become the kingdoms of our God and of his Christ." These are rules of the kingdom of God, not just add-ons to worldly rules, but completely subverting them through the sacrifice of Christ. King Charles, I believe, knows the besetting temptations of worldly kingship and is determined to overcome them in a spirit of service. But it's not just kings who have to wrestle with this. We all do. Each of us has power of one form or another, and the opportunity to gain more power. So the questions for us are these. What power do we have now in our relationships, in our work, in our community? What power do we want to have? In what spirit will we use our power? What temptations will have to overcome if we wish to use it in a spirit of service? And are we ready for the self-sacrifice involved in this? Lord, enthroned in heavenly splendor, look with favor upon your servant Charles, our King, and bestow upon him and all your people such a spirit of wisdom and love that we may live in loving service to one another and to your eternal glory. Amen.
Thank you. And now we move on to letters to the editor. Nikki, please.
And this one, headed Being British, from E. Wright. Roger Stevens' letter about the oath of allegiance in the coronation service and the irrelevance of the monarchy struck a sour note when the large majority of the population were enjoying a happy occasion. The oath of allegiance was optional. It is sworn by the armed forces and parliamentarians to the monarch. As head of state, by so doing, they are swearing allegiance to their country. It is not sworn to the passing government of the day. On the other hand, the king did indeed swear his allegiance to us. The first words he uttered in the coronation service were, I come not to be served, but to serve. The Chronicle's editorial comment, however, countered Mr. Stevens' letter. Correctly, you say, the Crown has little political power, but it is not the power that the Crown has, or the power that the Crown does not have. It is the power it denies all others. You conclude your comment, editor, by saying that our system of government is not perfect, but better than the alternatives. It was Winston Churchill who said that the system of government we have is not the best, but is the best we have. Indeed, our system of constitutional monarchy has been forged over centuries, beginning in 1215 with Magna Carta. It has enabled us, living on the small island we call home, and with less than 1% of the world's population, to have had, and continue to have, an influence for good far beyond our shores. As your editorial says, the coronation will remind the world what it is to be British. And that's from E. Wright, Alexandra Road, Chandler's Ford, Eastleigh.
Police state. I was surprised and delighted to discover in the Hampshire Chronicle on April the 20th an article discussing the reporting of street protests, in which it is observed that if the protesters upset the public, they got reported, but if all was peaceful, whatever the message, they were largely ignored. This happened with the Extinction Rebellion on the weekend of April the 21st to 23rd, when they organised a peaceful protest about lack of action on climate change, with marches and lectures attracting some 60,000 people a day. It was unfortunate that it coincided with the popular London Marathon, but it did demonstrate that they were a responsible organisation. Such a protest has the dual purpose of pressuring the government and educating the public. I was delighted in my 90th year to take part with my poster and its challenging message on the urgency and the need for major cultural change if the United Nations, which also doesn't get much publicity in this country, with its necessary treaties and initiatives, is to get the support it needs to tackle global warming in time. Many people read my message, and many more took photographs, and some told me I was telling the truth, much more than I could have achieved standing near Winchester Buttercross. However, on reading about this government's two new Acts of Parliament on public order and hearing about the arrests on Coronation Day, I realised that I would probably have been arrested several times on past protests about the injustice of what they have been in place if they had been in place then. It seems that one is dependent on the sensitivity of the protest site and the judgment of a particular police officer on whether this is happening. Creeping authoritarianism is worrying. And that was from Andrew Rutter of Quaker, St John's Road, Winchester.
And this letter is from Christopher Sherratt and is entitled Trust Capitalism. I wish to reply to Phil Gagg's response last week, Electric Answer Chronicle Letters, May the 11th, to my previous letter. He says, electric cars using gas-generated electricity will continue to have over half the emissions of the petrol and diesel cars they replace. So, to put it another way, electric cars using gas-generated electricity will almost halve the emissions of the petrol and diesel cars they replace. But if he cares to look at the website National Grid Live, he will see that last year most of the UK's electricity came from technologies that produce no emissions, i.e. solar, wind, hydroelectric and nuclear, which means that drivers who switch to electric cars will get charged, or which get charged in the UK, actually cut their emissions by three quarters. Furthermore, emissions which are produced to make electricity for their new cars get released from power stations which are many miles from Winchester itself. And carbon capture technology will reduce these in future. So much for Phil Gagg's claims that electric cars will not solve our problems. And electrification of the road fleet will bring some reduction in emissions. It's actually 75%. This century, the technologies used to generate electricity, store it, and use it in cars has changed rapidly. So why does Phil Gagg claim that electrification will be too slow and will not reduce emissions enough? The full force of global capitalism in search of profits will make it happen. And that's from Christopher Sherrett, Waverley Drive, South Wanston.
And this from Michelle Fox-Russell, headed Muddy Ridiculous. Every Wednesday, I volunteer in the Natural Sciences Department of the Museum Stores at Chilcombe, managed by Hampshire Cultural Trust. Since I live in St. Cross, I walk from here along Garnier Road and alongside the park and ride to the museum in Chilcombe Lane. This morning, May the 10th, when I reached the road bridge, when strengthening work is proceeding, I was told that pedestrian access had been suspended for 3 weeks. This was totally unexpected, since the signs at the beginning of the road still indicated that pedestrian access was allowed. I therefore had no choice but to walk along the river in order to access Bar End Road. As a result of the torrential rain the previous evening, this route was extremely muddy and hazardous, and the town shoes that I was wearing were left soaking wet. Needless to say, I was late arriving at the museum. Had I been warned of the closure, I would not have objected, but sadly this is all too familiar with roads and pedestrian walkways being blocked without any prior notice. In the 24 years that I have lived in Winchester, this sort of thing seems to be getting worse, and besides, trying the patience of local residents must surely confuse visitors. Whoever is responsible should ensure that residents in particular are forewarned of any closures in good time. And that from Michelle Fox-Russell, St. Cross, Winchester.
Having your say on more homes. In response to Andy Lester's recent article about protest to protect the environment, it does seem to have become a constant struggle for those of us who are concerned about the scale of development everywhere. The pressure to build more houses and nervousness about standing up to expansion or builders with strong financial backing is strong and unremitting. For example, there is an area of regenerated woodland in Bishop's Waltham, north of Rareridge Lane, that has been left undisturbed to mature over many years, and this has become a rich wildlife haven. It is also adjacent to the national park, and arguably should have been included. Yet, with virtually no consultation, we now have proposals to build 100 houses in the draft district plan supported by the parish council. What do local residents do? In an ideal world, there would be a sensible debate about the balance between the development and carbon capture alongside environmental protection. But it doesn't work like that, and the residents are often left with a feeling of powerlessness. And that was from Joss Crease of Rareridge Lane, Bishop's Waltham. And there is a lovely picture of the said wildlife feature, and it does look rather lovely.
And this letter is entitled A Time to Pay and refers to the NHS. I'm a patient at a very good practice, St. Paul's, an excellent dentist, Parchment Street, and visit a first-class optician, Boots. In 2019, it was easy to get an appointment at any of these. Things have changed in 2023, and even getting in contact with the surgery practice is difficult. I haven't been able to see a GP for years. I now know why. All other services that I use, I must pay for. but the NHS continues to be free. It simply doesn't work. The population is getting older, and like an old car, we need more attention. It's obvious that can't be done for free any longer. Those of us who can, and there must be safeguards for those who can't, must pay. I, along with most of my age group, have routine free prescriptions. There needs to be a charge. Likewise, a GP appointment at, say, £25 would help. Many of us think nothing about spending thousands of pounds on a holiday, so we can afford it. We must have a solution to get all these strikes and get our wonderful health service back on track. Steve Bryan, you are in a position to take action. Please do something, and now. My solution is not about being popular. It's about finding a solution which needs urgent attention. And that's from Tony Gaster, Old Kennels Lane, Oliver's Battery, Winchester.
Thank you. Now we have editorial comment, please, Nikki.
Which is headed, Paying the Price for Modern Living. Two stories in today's Chronicle highlight one of the major pressure points of modern society, development in the countryside. Plans for a major solar farm have been submitted for Pitt Dun, and villagers in the Candover Valley are opposing Southern Water's proposal for an 8-kilometre pipeline to help it address water supply issues in periods of drought. Both schemes are in the glare of a climate crisis. The solar proposal is a small step in combating the crisis, the pipeline a way of mitigating its impact. Neither is particularly welcome, but it is hard to argue against either, although certainly the Candover villagers have a strong point when they argue that Southern Water should do more to look after its commodity through fixing pipes rather than spending money on shifting water around the countryside. We have to accept such schemes as a price for living in the 21st century. Post-war, the countryside was scarred by tens of thousands of pylons for the electricity network. More recently, there has been the rash of mobile phone masts. Nowadays, we've got used to them. We've got so used to them, that they almost disappear from our view. Our brains manage to filter them out. Perhaps in a few decades, the same will be said about solar farms. So ubiquitous will they be.
Now, could we have first person, please, Norma?
And this is entitled Standing Firm and Fast in Oz by Joanna Lewis. Stand firm, hold fast. I think those were my favourite lines from the coronation service, delivered to King Charles by Archbishop Justin Welby, sounding uncharacteristically authoritative. And the words inspired us to act courageously and to keep faith in our values, no matter the criticism and carping. Like all great sayings or political slogans, it contains the fundamental ingredient for success, and it's widely open to interpretation. And in Mental Health Awareness Week, this call to resilience is useful. For we are living through times of division, conflict, and heated arguments. Social media constantly urges you to join that cause or to sign that petition, and it can get overwhelming. Very easily we can take on too many causes and never feel we're winning. Maybe it's better to focus on one. Put your spare energy into an issue, no matter how trivial, to the others, which is important to you. That will bring you into the in contact with people who are nice to be around. So today I'm coming out in support of wombats. Am I alone in finding the adverts for well-known comparison websites in case of identity theft and misrepresentation? Some clever advertising spark has come up with the idea of rehabilitating the image of a Russian meerkat by setting him up against an Australian wombat. Smart, studious, wise old meerkat versus lumbering remedial young cousin from down under. Not on my watch. There are many different love affairs you have in your life. Some are dramatic, life-changing, intense, and pay the bills. Others are more background music. They pop up from time to time with sweetness and soul. The what-ifs and the could-have-beens. a gentle tug at your heartstrings now and again. You know they're always out there, but far, very far away. I've always felt like that about Australia. Look what it's given us. Crocodile Dundee, Kylie, Shane Warne, Dame Everidge, Mike on the Beach topless from Mass F7. True, it's First Nation policies made apartheid South Africa look like Butlin's holiday camp, and they gave us Rolf Harris. But it also went from a nation of shoplifters at the start of the 19th century to one of the most prosperous parts of the British Empire by the start of the 20th. It was one of the first countries to concede women the vote, and according to one historian, the contributions of its working class men and women in the First and Second World Wars were so significant, the Dominions ensured the mother country remained great for much longer. I like them for lots of other reasons, and not just because of the fond memories of Vaughan, the Australian rules football nuclear physicist I met at Cambridge in the summer of 1994. After the horrific bushfires a few years ago, we saw a softer, more vulnerable side to Australians. Who was not moved by the sight of a badly singed koala? Teams of volunteers painstakingly nursed Australia's wildlife back from the brink. Consequently, I know a lot about wombats. I still support and get regular updates from rescue centres, often set up by ordinary people in their backyards, usually formidable women with blue hair and the sort that always carry an all-weather tent and a homemade defibrillator in the back of a pickup. Wombat should not personify yobbish, thick as pig-swilled young Australia. In any case, its creatures evolved, cut off from the rest of the Earth's landmass for millions of years, and also adapted to fill certain niches, perfectly suited to the limited conditions. Think Michael Hutchence from Innix S. In fact, Australia's no-nonsense fair society, its can-do, work-hard, play-hard attitude and self-belief, is currently making it top of destination for many young Brits. I know several grieving parents whose offspring have chosen recently to work there. Stand firm, hold fast, is how I see Australians. Good day, possums.
Thank you. Now we have Bill Garham, I think, Andrew.
And this is an alternative look at the news. First article is Celia Basks in Film Success. A Hampshire woman has found herself in the spotlight after a short film she worked on received critical acclaim. The success of short film Time Spent has paved the way for Stockbridge resident and co-founder of Mabel Brown Productions, Celia Dumas, age 52, to become involved with talks with leading networks and commissioners about developing the concept into an 8-part TV series. Written and directed by her business partner and co-founder, Rob Hutt, he's 40, the 13-minute film has won several awards, including Best Sci-Fi Short Film, and has been shortlisted for numerous festivals, including the Cannes World Film Festival. Time Spent follows Nathan Sanders as he is faced with a difficult decision at a job interview. Should he accept £2 million in exchange for 21 years of his life, which will be harvested, removed, and sold on to the company's powerful and wealthy clientele? Viewers of the film are left in suspense as to whether poor Nathan, with a young family to support and facing eviction, decides to take the money. Celia said, "We have been absolutely overwhelmed by the incredible response, as well as the doors that have been opened for conversations with some of the UK's biggest TV commissioners in the business. Rob and I both have years of experience in the TV and video production industry, but Time Spent really was a passion project, and we're just delighted that audiences feel the same way." And it's an interesting film concept, I must say. And this is accompanied by a photograph of Celia, working in the sunshine, which is quite nice, and a I assume a shot of, this is a shot of Nathan, which must be the promotional video or promotional photograph they use for the film Time Spent. The second article is the Cathedral Chicks Growth Spurt. Winchester Cathedral's resident peregrine chick is growing fast, despite being only just 2 weeks old. Winnie's chick, and I think Winnie naming the cathedral peregrine Winnie is fantastic, but never mind. Winnie's chick emerged on April the 30th with 3 eggs yet to hatch. Keith Betton, chairman of the Hampshire Ornithological Society, is going to inspect the chick this week and will remove the others that haven't hatched. Winnie had 2 chicks last year, named Elizabeth and George, who flew the nest in August. The new chick is yet to be given a name. Winchester Cathedral's peregrine webcams have shown how quickly the chick is growing, with parents Winnie and William regularly bringing it food. And this is accompanied by a photograph, I don't know if it's from the webcam or just a separately taken photograph, showing the peregrine falcon on what looked like some of the steps and some of the gravel at the cathedral.
Thank you. Now we have this week's announcements. We start with what's on, a few items. Festival, first good news for foodies. This summer, Winchester will have its first dedicated free festival celebrating local producers and talented chefs. Hampshire Fair is organising the very first Winchester Food Festival on Sunday, July the 9th, as a key event in the Hampshire Food Festival. Working with Winchester BID and Winchester Cathedral, the festival will be free to attend and showcase produce from the Winchester district and wider Hampshire area. It will be held in the Cathedral's outer close and will open from 10 a.m. with a chef's kitchen running from 12 p.m. I suppose it should be 12 noon. Top chefs from favourite restaurants will be sharing tips and creating recipes using local produce. And the lineup includes Damien Brown from the Chesil Rectory, Miff Kyam from Kyoto Kitchen, and Lenny Carr Roberts of the Bugle in Twyford, the Fox in Crawley, and Shoal in Winchester. Produce will range from superfood microgreens to locally caught trout, coffee, orchard juices, and no alcohol cocktails, to gins infused with local botanicals. For more information about the Winchester Food Festival, visit winchester-foodfestival.co.uk. The school opens its gardens to the public. Winchester College will be opening its gardens to the public as part of the National Garden Scheme. Last year it took part and raised more than £4,500 for charities. And this time, over the weekend of June the 4th and 5th, visitors will be able to explore Moberly Garden, War Cloister, Bethesda Garden and the Warden's Garden. Members of the college gardening team will be on hand to share their expertise on maintaining the grounds. And this year's focus will also be on how the gardeners have enhanced biodiversity within the school's broader commitment to sustainability. Tickets cost £10 per adult, children are free, and can be purchased on the door. Homemade teas will also be available, and the gardens will be open from 11 a.m. to 4 p.m, and that's on the 4th and 5th of June. Cinema goes out of doors, and a estate near Winchester will be one of 74 open-air locations in an outdoor cinema company's summer tour. Adventure Cinema has announced Avington Park as one of its new venues for its upcoming season of outdoor screenings, and tickets are already running low for Top Gun Maverick on Tuesday, August the 15th, with Mamma Mia following on August the 16th and Dirty Dancing on August the 17th. Films will be shown next to the 16th century country house within 150 acres of private parkland. Tickets start at £9.50 and are available from adventurecinema.co.uk. Irish folk group gig. Fans of folk music will be in for a treat as the Furies come to Winchester at the end of May. Described as one of Ireland's all-time most acclaimed and influential middle-of-the-road folk and traditional bands, the Furies will bring to the stage their best loved songs, including classics like When You Were Sweet 16, Red Rose Cafe, From Claire to Here, and The Green Fields of France. The Furies will be at the Theatre Royal in Winchester on Saturday, May the 27th at 7:30 p.m. And for more information or to book tickets, call 01962 840 440. That's the end of the What's On, and now we have Lighting Up time, which ends on Friday the 19th of May at 5:10 a.m. and begins at 8:54 p.m. And next Wednesday the 24th of May, it ends at 5:04 a.m. and begins at 9:01 p.m. And if you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you've received, please contact us on 01962 861 229, and this number can also be found on the key fob attached to the memory stick. And now we continue with further items of general news. Nikki.
And this one headed Japanese restaurant excited about big move. And this is Miff Kayum again, who was mentioned in the food fair. A Japanese restaurant in Winchester has announced that it is moving after 11 years in Parchment Street. Kyoto Kitchen owner Miff Kayum made the announcement in a video on Facebook and said the restaurant is moving to Bridge Street. In the video, Mr. Kayum said, "It's now official. After 11 years of operating out of Parchment Street, Kyoto Kitchen will be moving to No. 5 Bridge Street, or Bridge Street House as it's known. It's an old coach house that used to serve visitors to Winchester. We're a little bit sad, having been in Parchment Street for over 11 years. We have a lot of memories there, but I'm sure you will agree that we will be able to do so much more with this space. It's a wonderful evolution for us." Mr. Kayum explained that the plan is to make the area next to the bar a private dining room, also to reduce the bar down to create extra seating. He said there is a wonderful courtyard area, which will hopefully be ready for the summer. The outside building will be used for storage. "I'm very excited. We're hoping that the works will be completed in the next 5 to 6 weeks.
Latest insect additions to the zoo's lineup. A plague of locusts and an orchestra of crickets have joined the growing list of animals at Marwell Zoo. The insects, housed in the zoo's Arid Lands exhibit near Cafe Grays, have proven popular with guests. In the wild, desert locusts and two spotted crickets would normally be found in the desert habitats. The two spotted crickets, which look a bit like a large black-brown beetle and often hide under logs and are adept at digging holes to create homes. Desert locusts are larger, grasshopper-like creatures that shed their skin several times during the development, as well as changing colour and growing wings. The pinker-looking locusts among those currently on display are the older creatures within the group, and will eventually turn yellow. Locusts are infamous for travelling in swarms and destroying crops as they consume the equivalent of their own body weight each day. Invertebrates team leader Dan Garrick said, "The locusts will consume large amounts of green matter, so the team will be providing fresh browse daily. Guests may hear the crickets singing. This behaviour is done by males to attract females, possibly also to demarcate territory. It is achieved by the males rubbing their wings together, and this behaviour is called stridulation. And for tickets and more information, go to marwell.org.uk.
A man was killed in the M3 crash. A man was killed in a fatal collision on the M3, which caused day-long traffic chaos in Winchester. Two vehicles collided on the southbound carriageway near Twyford Down, close to Junction 10 at about 10:45 a.m. on Tuesday. A flatbed van towing a trailer struck the rear of an articulated lorry that had broken down. There is no hard shoulder on that section following smart motorway works. The victim, the van driver, is 38, and comes from Walsall in the West Midlands. He has not been named by police. The police closed the M3 between junctions 9 and 11, forcing traffic into the city centre from the motorway, and also from the A34 as the tailbacks stretched to Three Maids Hill and north of Kingsworthy. The congestion in the city centre was worsened by the ongoing closure of Garnier Road in St Cross to through traffic for works on the Tun Bridge. Officers conducted an investigation and reopened the M3 to traffic at around 8 p.m. on Tuesday. The police issued a statement saying, "We are appealing for witnesses and information following a fatal road traffic collision on the M3. Police were called to a collision on the M3 southbound near Junction 11 at 10:43 a.m. yesterday, May 16th. This involved a broken-down HGV and a grey Mercedes Sprinter. The driver of the Mercedes, a 38-year-old man from Walsall, was sadly pronounced dead at the scene. The southbound carriageway was closed for several hours as the dynamics of the collision led to a complicated and difficult recovery after an initial investigation was completed. Sergeant Spencer Ragg of the Roads Policing Unit said, "I would like to thank motorists for their patience yesterday, whilst we dealt with the aftermath of this incident with our partners from the Emergency Services, Highways Agency and Specialist Recovery. I would ask that anyone who may have witnessed the incident itself, or either vehicle, just prior to the collision, to contact us. We would particularly like to speak to anyone with relevant dashcam footage that may assist our investigation." Traffic was at near gridlock on numerous roads, including Andover Road, Worthy Road, North Walls, Frygate, and Chesil Street.
Funds crisis looms for family charity. A Hampshire charity that helps families avoid crisis is facing its own challenges as the economic situation affects funding and donations. Homestart Hampshire has said that despite efforts to secure fundraising and introduce efficiencies, it doesn't have the funds to continue all of its work to support families struggling to navigate the financial, social and personal pressures of parenting. The crisis means Homestart Hampshire is asking for help in ensuring that they can support families and children across Hampshire by donating through their Aviva Community Fund campaign, which means every donation made is doubled. Homestart Hampshire's chief executive, Glenn Mallon, said, "Every parent knows that bringing up a family can be incredibly tough. Homestart Hampshire is here to help those who are struggling to get essential support quickly before an issue becomes a crisis. Our staff and volunteers help families with everything from coping with isolation and anxiety to children with behavioural challenges. We are the lifeline families depend on to help themselves back to solid ground. We want to continue to support families and children that need us the most. It's a desperate situation, and I'm appealing to anyone who can help support our vital community service, whether that's by doubling any donation through the Aviva Community Fund campaign or volunteering. So it breaks my heart that we're in a situation where we may be forced to turn those in need away and reduce our services. But it's important that we get ourselves onto a sustainable footing so that we can continue to deliver a service to as many people as possible." To support Homestart Hampshire's Aviva Community Fund campaign, visit, this is all one word, avivacommunityfund.co.uk/p/financial-support-and-advice-for-families. They don't make it easy, do they? I will definitely be sorting that one. Supporting.
Top marks for marvellous marmalade. Four Hampshire Women's Institute members are celebrating their success at an international marmalade competition. Janet Arnold, Damel Zahili, Chris Stride and Mo Bloomfield from Oliver's Battery were up against the best in the land in producing Paddington's favourite preserve. The Dalmain 2023 International Marmalade Competition aims to champion marmalade makers from around the world and stages its annual contest in Cumbria. Tensions rose for the Oliver's Battery 4 as Mo heard that she had won gold in the artisan competition for her Momo's Preserve, and Chris and Janet received their silver certificates while Demelza was left with nothing. Demelza said, "When I heard both Chris and Janet had received their results, I did not have high hopes for any success. But when a neighbour delivered a misdirected envelope, I was very pleased with the contents. I still can't quite believe I got full marks and gold for my several full fruity entry." And there's a lovely picture of all the ladies holding up their certificates and with big, big smiles and also holding their marmalade.
Another pub calls time. A pub in Mitchell Dever has ceased trading with immediate effect due to overwhelming costs. Another business has fallen to the cost of living crisis, with the Half Moon and Spread Eagle closing its doors on Wednesday, May the 10th. Owners Paula and Andy announced the news the same morning on Facebook with a statement addressed to their customers and friends. And the post read, "With enormous sadness, we have ceased to trade with immediate effect. We have faced a challenging few years. COVID within the first 11 weeks of trading, personal illness, and the new uncontrollable cost of living crisis. Any one of those things would be hard to manage. We would like to thank all of those who've supported us over the past couple of years. We have some amazing customers. Many of you became friends, and we will miss you. Green King put the pub up for sale in 2018, before it was saved and reopened in 2020, thanks to a community benefit society that formed to update the building to make a community hub. The future of the Winchester Road spot is now once again unknown. The former publicans have been contacted for comment. Customers who rallied round the owners by posting their support beneath the Facebook announcement, Alice Johnson commented, "We shall be very sad to see you go. You did an amazing job, first opening the pub and then running it so successfully. Many good memories. Thank you all so much." And there is actually a second part of this, again relating to Green King, the owners. And this is the pub refurb. So a pub by the River and Railway Station in Shawford has closed whilst it undergoes a major refurbishment. The Bridge Inn in the town closed recently, but its reopening date is yet to be announced. The pub next to the Itchen Navigation will no longer be part of the Chef and Brewer brand, according to its website, but will remain under Green King. The company said more information will be released next week following the work.
Lily relives shock of cancer diagnosis. A fitness instructor from Winchester has spoken of her shock after the lump in her neck she assumed was a pulled muscle was actually stage 4 cancer. Lily Venus, now 26, visited her GP in November 2021 when a lump around her collarbone started making her job teaching exercise classes difficult. Tests later discovered that Lily had tumours in her chest, lung, and on both sides of her neck. Lily said she put her earliest symptoms down to her job, the COVID-19 pandemic, and getting a new puppy. "In September 2021, I was teaching about 6 exercise classes a week via Zoom," Lily said. "I started experiencing this strange lightheadedness, but I didn't think much of it. I also was incredibly fatigued. I would nap at least once a day, and waking up in the morning was difficult, regardless of how much sleep I'd got. On November the 7th, 2021, myself and my long-term partner Ryan went and stayed in a little shepherd's hut in Petersfield for 2 nights. The day we left, we drove to York to pick up our new puppy, and on the drive I had an awkward feeling in my neck. It felt like I'd slept funny. My symptoms continued for the next week, but I still was under the impression that I was just exhausted due to the new puppy and exercise, and the neck pain was from tweaking my neck. At the end of that week, I had a lump come up just above my collarbone. The discomfort was preventing me from being able to teach the upper body parts of my exercise classes, so I booked a doctor's appointment. After feeling her neck and asking her a few questions, Lily's doctor calmly told her that she needed to go to A&E. Lily thought her doctor was overreacting, but went and had tests done anyway. 2 weeks later, doctors sat her down and told her she had stage 4 Hodgkin's lymphoma, a type of blood cancer. I was told I had the option to have my chemotherapy at the teenage and young adult unit in Southampton Hospital. I was told that because of the chemotherapy, there was a slim chance I could lose my fertility. I was offered IVF, which would have delayed my treatment for about 6 months. I found making this decision really tough. I talked to Ryan about it, and he said, "Without you, there is no baby. It's important we get you healthy as soon as possible." Lily started her treatment 2 weeks before Christmas in 2021. She had 12 rounds of ABVD chemotherapy spread over 6 months, and she was able to have a lower dose on her last 8 sessions because of how well the cancer was responding to treatment. She has now been in remission for 12 months. "I am so grateful for my doctor and my diagnosis process," Lily said. "It was so quick, and I feel like catching my cancer at the stage it was is one of the reasons I was able to achieve remission. I see my oncologist every 3 months for blood tests and a checkup, because relapse for Hodgkin's lymphoma most commonly occurs within the first 2 years. After 2 years, my visits will drop to every 6 months, and then yearly. If I stay in remission for 5 years, they will basically consider me cured. Luckily, I have kept my fertility." And there are several pictures of Lily. Obviously, one before everything went wrong, with long brown hair and her wonderful smile. And then one of her actually having her chemotherapy treatment, obviously having lost her hair, but still with this wonderful smile. And sitting on a bench in the sunshine, again, waiting for her. And then a lovely one of her back, teaching her class, fully recovered and in remission.
Horse Fair rides into town this weekend. An 800-year-old event which attracts thousands of visitors and travellers each year is back this Saturday, May the 20th. Wickham Square will be closed from midday on Friday, May the 19th, in preparation for the traditional horse fair, which sees members of the travelling community travel to the village to sell and race ponies and horses. The square will then reopen on Saturday evening or Sunday morning after the clean-up. Wickham Horse Fair returned with its market, fun fair and show of horses last year after a two-year break amid the pandemic. Wickham Parish Council Clerk Nikki Oliver said, "Everyone is well used to the fair, but we're hoping that the fun fair will be bigger and better this year to attract more people. The fair visitors are delighted that it's back in full swing. It's an interesting event to see all the ponies in their finery. We have a police presence here, so it's usually pretty calm." Wickham Parish Council posted on Facebook, "The fair is part of Wickham's history and is always worth a visit. Some of the businesses in the square will be open this year, and don't forget to check out the fun fair." Market organiser Bernice Walls said, "The event is run trouble-free for the last 25 years. The event is unusual, exciting, and very well run by the police. It's a great day out. The fun fair is set up especially for people of Wickham and works with local businesses and the police to try and avoid any disruption to the local residents. The event is steeped in history. Fun fair attractions have attended Wickham Square for many generations. The fair was originally a place once a year to hire staff to work on local farms and to show off and sell animals. Even in those early days, there was always a form of fun fair to make it a special day." And there's a picture of a beautiful fawn horse pulling one of those racing carts. And it looks, well, he's just a beautiful, beautiful horse. Yeah, so there must be many more like them.
So an abandoned car exits the multi-story after 2 months. It's gone. Workmen have finally removed an abandoned car from a Winchester car park after more than 2 months. The 55 Reg blue Fiat Panda was left in the Barfield multi-storey park and ride car park since early March. It is now untaxed and has no valid MOT. So as no parking tickets have been purchased, it has accrued scores of fixed penalty notices, including fines of potentially four figures. The vehicle was removed at around 8 a.m. on Tuesday morning. Earlier this week, a city council spokesman said the registered keeper would be contacted to give them a last chance to claim the vehicle and to pay any charges incurred. So far, so good. The vehicle has featured this week in two TikTok videos by a Zoe Bread. It shows her placing homemade facial features on the car and contacting the Chronicle, as well as talking to a traffic warden removing the material from the vehicle. Miss Bread, as she's known, also appears in her own videos with a slice of bread covering her face. And then, and this shows my age, she has 943,000 followers on TikTok, and her videos have been liked 28 million times. Yeah, this is all beyond me, I'm afraid.
Beyond all of us.
Completely beyond me. However, we have two pictures. We have quite a pretty picture of a blue Fiat Panda, which actually looks quite polished, but never mind. And then we have inset a picture of the lady in question with, as it says, a slice of toast or bread covering her face, and onto the slice of bread has been penciled or whatever the a sort of a face. All quite amazing.
Assisted dying campaign takes to the streets. The local Wessex Dignity and Dying Group held a stall in Winchester High Street to publicise the fact that local MP Steve Bryan is heading the government inquiry into assisted dying. Last year, Mr. Bryan attended a meeting of the local group, assuring them of his commitment to making an evidence-based decision. Initially, the inquiry was to hear evidence only from professional experts, but now this has been extended to hear from the public, but limited to a total of 3 hours. The stall attracted a lot of attention and collected signatures for an open letter asking Mr. Bryan to recognise the cost to his constituency of the current law. Independent evidence suggests that over Mr. Bryan's 13 years as MP, at least 130 dying people will have had no relief of their pain in the last 3 months of life, even if they had access to the best possible palliative care, and every year between 5 and 10 people with a terminal diagnosis will die or try to die by suicide every year. The open letter will be presented to Mr. Bryan in the summer. And there's a photograph of the stall with their pink sweatshirts with a big white tick on and pink balloons and a large sign saying 84% of the British public support an assisted dying law.
Shop getting back to business after crash. An Alsford butcher's and fishmonger's shop is emerging from financial hardship 6 months after the front of the building was damaged in a car accident. C.E. Evans and Sons on West Street was struck by a car on December the 28th, which damaged the shop window. Shop owners Nigel and Eunice Foundling assumed that the issue would be swiftly resolved and the damage to the shop repaired. However, work was delayed due to the building being a listed property. The delays caused financial difficulties, and Eunice said they could no longer display fish in the front of the window. Our takings on the fish counter have dropped by a quarter, I would say, at least. And I think some people are a bit tired of coming in. They think, oh well, they've got not got any fish. We can't store fish the same and we can't display it the same. And people, as you know, shop with their eyes. And if they can't see it, I mean, we put a counter indoors and we've tried all sorts. but our takings, especially over Easter, they were half what they normally are. So you can imagine, in this sort of climate anyway, when things are quite tight, it just made it worse. Further strain has been caused on the business by a freezer breaking after it was damaged in the crash, requiring it to be replaced. However, almost 6 months after the incident which caused the damage, Eunice said that the damage is finally being repaired, with the work to be completed by the end of May. Eunice wanted to thank the customers who continued to buy from the butchers, followed by the incident, saying, "We really appreciate the loyalty to us in putting up with the upheaval and inconvenience, and we trust that those who have had to go elsewhere will come back to enjoy fresh fish." And there's a picture of the fishmongers standing outside their shop, and an insert with the car that had backed into the shop window.
Early opposition to M3 upgrade plans. The opening shots have been fired over the major proposed revamp of the M3 Junction 9 at Winall. Local people and groups gave their criticism and suggestions for National Highways' major plans at an open floor hearing at the Wessex Hotel in Winchester yesterday, Wednesday, May the 17th. National Highways estimate that the cost of the scheme will be in the region of £190 million to £210 million. It will create a direct route from the M3 to the A34 without using the roundabout. The main issues raised at the hearing were the increased capacity on the surrounding road and cycling networks, and environmental impacts and safety. Denise Roswell of Eastern Lane said, "I'm worried about the impact this will have on residents of Eastern Lane. The construction compound is to be located close to my property. The plans will impact Sustrans Route 23, which runs from Winchester to Easton and beyond. It's very well used by cyclists, and it makes it very easy for us to walk to Winall. The loss of that footpath will have a huge impact." And she said, "We currently have a beautiful field to look at where we can count the deer. But soon, I imagine, we'll be counting diggers." Rob Jordan, Secretary of Cycle Winchester, said, "The scheme should provide improved cycling infrastructure. We want a satisfactory diversion route. Currently, the plans will cause a reduction in cycling, which is the opposite of what we're campaigning for." And Chris Gillam from Winchester Friends of the Earth explained some of the history behind the scheme. And he said, "In 1975, the Friends of the Earth were against the first M3 scheme. The new Junction 9 scheme will cause a capacity increase and environmental impacts. There has been no consideration of proper transport alternatives, and I have concerns about the impact this will have on the local road networks. It's supposed to reduce congestion, but it goes on and on." Councillor Jackie Porter said, "This would increase the traffic at the Cart and Horses Junction, which has seen many accidents. Safety improvements could be addressed in the Junction 9 plans. With the dreadful accident on the M3, we saw that the local roads can't take the increased volume of traffic." And at the end of the hearing, Catherine Tracy, representing National Highways, said that written responses would be provided by June the 6th. For further information about the M3 Junction 9 improvement project, visit infrastructure.planninginspectorate.gov.uk.
Hospice staff hit the heights. Staff from Winchester Hospice and St John's Winchester have completed a 3-hour hike as part of a fundraising effort. A team of 23 climbed 4 miles up Penny Fan, the highest peak in South Wales, at 2,907 feet above sea level. Caring for others in their day-to-day roles, the group chose to support Winchester Hospices further by undertaking the fundraising challenge. As part of their fundraising, the residents and staff of St John's Winchester have also held a cake and coffee morning, which raised £218.30, with a total of more than £2,800 having been raised for the hospice charity at the time of writing. Donna Coombs, clinical matron at Winchester Hospice, said, "The challenge was absolutely fantastic. Working with St John's has been so valuable in bringing our communities together. We really look forward to continuing working together in the coming months." And there is this wonderful photograph of probably about 15 of them, all in their purple T-shirts with a wonderful design of sort of flowers, I think, or a tree, and Winchester Hospice written across it. But they are all looking so happy with what they've achieved, and they have a cockapoo with them to keep them company.
New light on missing mum. NewsQuest investigations editor Mark Williams-Thomas has uncovered new evidence in a 30-year-old murder case, including an alleged confession by a key suspect. Following a four-year probe, Williams-Thomas has put his findings into a two-part podcast about the baffling case of Nicola Payne, an 18-year-old mum who went missing in Coventry in December 1991. Prior to joining NewsQuest, Williams-Thomas was known for his work exposing Jimmy Savile's prolific paedophilia in the ITV Exposure documentary, The Other Side of Jimmy Savile, which prompted hundreds of other unheard-of victims to come forward and many offenders caught decades later for their crimes. Now, in a new two-part podcast, The Unsolved Murder of Nicola Payne, Williams-Thomas presents significant new evidence in the case. He said, "My aim with this investigation and podcast was to provide closure to John, a grieving father at 78, and Owen, a son without memories of his mother. I bring forward new and credible information about the case, including an alleged confession by a key suspect. Nicola's disappearance while walking the short distance from her boyfriend's house to her own family home in Potter's Green, Coventry, leaving her seven-month-old baby Owen with partner Jason Cook, despite one of the largest search operations in British history, Nicola has never been found. You can search for the podcast at The Unsolved Murder of Nicola Payne."
Needless traffic lights cause gridlock. Hundreds of people were needlessly caught in traffic through Winchester city centre on Saturday due to a set of temporary traffic lights being left a day longer than necessary. Despite the works by Scottish and Southern Electricity Networks, SSEN, in Eastgate Street being completed on Friday evening, May the 12th, the temporary lights enforcing single-file traffic remained throughout Saturday. The traffic lights were set up after a street light had blown out, leaving some houses in Eastgate Street without power until 10 p.m. An SSEN spokesman said, "Scottish and Southern Electricity Networks was alerted to a fault in Winchester, which had resulted in the traffic lights on Eastgate Street being off supply. To ensure safety of road users and SSEN engineers, temporary traffic lights were installed and the main supply was repaired and reconnected at 10 p.m. on Friday evening. The temporary traffic lights remained in situ until Saturday to enable the completion of further required works. SSEN apologizes to customers for any inconvenience this power interruption and subsequent repairs may have caused. But, contrary to SSEN's statement, local resident and Green Party campaigner Richard Needham called the company at 10:30 p.m. on Saturday night after the traffic lights were left up all day, even though work had finished. Mr. Needham said, "The traffic was all backed up along North Walls and Chessel Street, with idling engines causing unnecessary noise and pollution. I thought, this can't be right, as there was no hole in the road or work being done. The only obstruction was the traffic lights. Even at 10 p.m, cars, buses and ambulances were backed up along Eastgate Street. It seemed ridiculous. Everyone had to suffer all day for no reason. The air quality in Winchester is bad enough. It was chaos for people. It must have been a miscommunication between SSEN and traffic management. According to Mr. Needham, the company admitted that the lights should have been removed earlier when speaking on the phone to him, and took the temporary traffic lights out during Saturday night.
Independents fight back. A city centre road with the highest proportion of independent businesses is launching an event to boost awareness of what's on offer. Parchment Street is just a minute's walk away from Winchester High Street, but loses footfall due to being off the beaten track. Businesses in the road have teamed up to host a promotional weekend titled Patronise Parchment Street to raise awareness of what they have to offer. On Friday, May the 26th and Saturday, May the 27th, 17 Parchment Street businesses will be taking part with discounts, events and exclusive offers available, as well as history tours. The event has been organised by Charlie Broom from the Cupboard of Health and Tim Beavis of Pycaramba to encourage shoppers to explore more than just the high street. Charlie said, "The highest concentration of independent businesses in Winchester is in this street. We're just a stone's throw from the high street, but we always seem to get missed. It's such a lovely eye-catching road, and I'm surprised more isn't made of it." Tim added, "The event is about growing the network between traders along Parchment Street and encouraging communal working to increase awareness that we're here. We're a bit off the beaten track, and we want to change that to be more commonly associated with Winchester." Tour guide Claire Dixon postponed her holiday to offer her services. She said, "I've studied Parchment Street and been providing Winchester tours for the past 15 years, so this seemed too good an opportunity to miss." Tours will start from WH Smith at 12:30 p.m. and 2:30 p.m. and can be booked at the Cupboard of Health for £3 per person. Free face painting will be available from 12:30 p.m. to 4:30 p.m. on Saturday in the covered dining area by Pycaramba. Kites displayed in windows will form a treasure trail with prizes up for grabs. Other businesses will be providing limited deals such as 2-for-1 piercings at Asgard, 10% off for future bookings at Angus Podiatry, and 20% off some jewellery stores. Meanwhile, event hosts Cupboard of Health and Pycaramba will have raffles, deals and a Parchment Street pie. The businesses hope the promotional weekend will increase Parchment Street pride and encourage traders to want to move into future vacant units. The event follows relocation announcements from Kyoto Kitchen and Shop Form, locating on the street since 1999. And there's a picture of the owners of Cupboard of Health and Pycaramba, which has a wonderful sign saying, "Come in, we are awesome." And then at the top of the sign, it says, "Pies, mash, comics and more." Interesting.
Secret safari tents to make a day of it. Marlborough Zoo visitors looking to make their day extra special can now upgrade their trip with a private safari-style tent in a secret garden. All 5 bell tents are fully furnished and away from the crowd in a secluded walled garden, with the aim of providing a luxury base for zoo-goers to relax between activities. Upon arrival, visitors will be greeted by a host who will show them to their tent and brunch hamper. The exclusive package also includes early entry to the zoo, Wi-Fi, private access to the toilets in Marwell Hall, hot and cold drinks, garden games to occupy the kids, and discounts that can be used in the cafe, food outlets and gift shops. The Secret Garden Bell Tent package is available up to 4 people at the price of £295 for non-members and £200 for annual members. Bookings must be made in advance. And there's a picture of a family inside one of the tents with the children playing on the floor, and it looks very comfortable.
New exhibition at Art Gallery. A contemporary art gallery has launched its summer exhibition with a demonstration by a Hampshire stone carver. Rachel Bebb, contemporary summer showcase, Leaning into the Light, opened last Friday with a private viewing and presentation by stone carver Zoe Wilson, who lives and works in Houghton. The exhibition will feature sculpture, ceramics, original prints, letter carving, and engraved glass, with pieces inspired by the natural world and environmental concerns. Zoe is one of several artists making their debut at the gallery in Broughton, near Stockbridge. The stone carver creates complex geometric sculptures from mainly British stones and received a scholarship from the Queen Elizabeth Scholarship Trust, a charity that supports the continuation of traditional British crafts. The Hampshire artist said, "It takes complete concentration and patience to carve complex geometry, a process I find to be both challenging and calming. It's beautifully simple. I use only a mallet and a couple of chisels to create the designs. Our eyes have become accustomed to seeing the accuracy that machine production creates. This increases the technical challenge of carving something satisfying to look at. The most fascinating part for me is the center of the patterns. It's the most difficult to carve and the part with least room for error. I find this technical challenge of my skill exhilarating. I cherish the process of stone carving and the slowness of the craft. For me, it feels like a privilege to make something slowly and thoughtfully. While I'm quite quick at carving now, it still isn't something that can be rushed, and there are certainly no shortcuts. I'm always aware of how long the process has been for the material to be formed. It makes me strive to do something which is worthy of its creation process. Leaning Into the Light continues at the gallery in Rookery Lane until June the 10th, and on Fridays 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. and Saturdays 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. And this is accompanied by a photograph of stone carver Zoe Wilson at work. And just on there, there's an incredibly complex leaf pattern that she has produced, which is, it's amazing that people have this level of skill.
Pub Pie to Help Theatre. The Wickham Arms is to support two Winchester charities through the sales of its Wick Pie. The pub will be donating 25 pence for every Wick Pie sold to the Winchester Cathedral Fund, which contributes to its ongoing restoration, as well as 25 pence to the Theatre Royal's charity Play to the Crowd, which runs local arts events. As previously reported, Play to the Crowd recently lost its government funding. The Wick Pie was created in the 1960s by the then landlord of the pub, Philip Marshall, and it has been a staple ever since. Current head chef, Luke MS, has worked to improve the recipe with a mix of braised mutton and lamb, mixed with lamb juice and topped with mashed potatoes. Quite hungry. John Howard, general manager of the Wickham Arms, said, "The Wick Pie is a dish of legendary tastiness, and I'm delighted that we can now use it to help fund these two amazing local causes. A great pub should always provide hearty food to nourish the soul and be at the centre of the local community, and this initiative beautifully combines those two key principles. If you've never been to the Wickham Arms or never had the Wick Pie, there is no better time to come. Luke is a fantastic chef, and his take on this pub tradition is just delicious. I guarantee you will not leave disappointed."
Teachers muck in for cancer survivor Jasper. A 7-year-old who beat cancer has inspired his teachers to take on a very muddy fundraising challenge to help save more lives. Jasper Johnson from Albrook will be cheering on a team from Colden Common Primary School during Cancer Research UK's Pretty Muddy on Southampton Common on July the 22nd, as well as taking on the Mud Splattered Junior Obstacle Course with a group of friends. Jasper, whose story is featured in Race Packs, hopes it will encourage more people to take part and raise vital funds for research. He said, "We need more medicine so that every time someone gets poorly like me, they can go and get a cure for it. Now I'm much better and I can go to school and see my friends." After experiencing months of excruciating tummy pain and weight loss, Jasper was diagnosed with Burkitt's lymphoma last January. After recovering from major surgery, he received chemotherapy, which Cancer Research UK helped to develop. Mum Brenda said, you go through a pretty shocking time. You never think that you're going to be in a situation like that. Just to know that there is treatment available and to be told that it had a 98% chance of recovering makes the burden a little lighter. Pretty muddy team leader Jasper's head teacher Francis Hardy added, "Jasper has been a real inspiration to all of us, as it was a tough journey from diagnosis all the way through. We lived that with the family, so that the reason behind supporting this is heartfelt. When we had the news that he was given the all clear, it was absolute joy, but we need to help raise money to support all the families that go through cancer and whose journeys are much longer. Cancer Research UK's Race for Life is an inspiring series of 3K, 5K and 10K. Pretty Muddy and Pretty Muddy Kids events, which raise millions of pounds every year. And to enter, you visit visitraceforlife.org. And there's lots of pictures of the team in various stages of on the equipment they're going to use. And there's a message from Jasper's mum, Brenda. "The fact Jasper's teachers are now taking part in Pretty Muddy to help the cause makes me feel really emotional. They were the most incredible support while he was poorly."
Shooting starts on location for new series. A production company is set to begin filming a new HBO series in Overton this week. The filming is for a new television drama series, The Regime, which is thought to star Kate Winslet and Hugh Grant. Site 5 Productions will be filming in Station Road in Overton today, Thursday, May the 18th. That's already happened, according to a letter sent to residents. According to the letter, filming will consist of a motorcade sequence travelling to and from Overton Mill. There will be up to 6 vehicles travelling together and within the speed limit. A film vehicle with a telescopic crane on top of it will be in use, as well as a drone to film the vehicles travelling along the road. Whilst filming in the area, some smoke effects may be used for the atmosphere. Filming is set to take place between 8:30 a.m. and 6 p.m. today, that was Thursday, May the 18th, with a crew presence expected in the area from 7 a.m. in the morning. Set 5 have said they will be particularly mindful of keeping noise to a minimum during this time, and there will be diversions in place and access will be permitted for residents within the closure. And this is accompanied by a large photograph of, I guess that's Station Road in Overton, showing the area where the motorcade will take place. An inset is a picture of Kate Winslet, who's looking very Kate Winslet.
Bank to close 2 branches. A major high street bank is to wind up 2 local branches in the latest batch of closures. The shutters of the Barclays branches in Hedge End and Eastleigh will be pulled down later this year. It comes as Barclays previously announced more than 30 closures in 2023, following in the footsteps of other UK banks, including NatWest. The Eastleigh branch in Upper Market Street is earmarked for closure on August 11th. In a letter to customers, Barclays said, "We'll be closing our Eastleigh branch on Friday, August 11th at 12 p.m. We appreciate this might not be welcome news, but we'll make sure you and your local community continue to use our banking services when you need them. It'll just be in a different way." The Hedge End branch in Lower Northern Road is reportedly set to shut on August the 17th.
Break-in at village shop. A village shop was broken into, but nothing has been reported stolen. Police were called to Central Convenience Store in Swanmore at 10 p.m. on Thursday, May the 11th, following reports of a break-in. Officers secured the shop and post office in New Road, which remained closed until Friday, May the 12th, afternoon, sparking concerns on social media. A notice in the window read, "Closed until further notice." Avril Stone commented in the Facebook group Swanmore Village chat room, "How many more times? I feel sorry for the staff as it must shake them up." The shop manager declined to comment while police continued to investigate. A spokesperson for Hampshire Police said entry was forced to the store through the rear. At this time, it does not appear that anything has been stolen. Two suspects, believed to be men in dark clothing, were seen leaving the store. Anyone with information should call 101 with the reference 44230185793.
Thank you. That concludes the extracts for this week. So thank you to our editors for selecting the extracts and to the copying and memory stick preparation teams. And thanks to our readers, Nikki Baring.
Goodbye.
Norma York.
Goodbye.
Andrew Parkinson.
Goodbye.
And from me, Keith Vincent, goodbye. And do have an enjoyable week. When you've finished with this week's recording, please put the memory stick back in the wallet and return it as soon as possible, placing the address label inside the wallet. Thank you.